This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we hear from an investigator into the contamination of Coopville's water supply by the Navy, and Charlie Burmant talks with the author of The Square Inch of Silence about the value of quiet. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Many of the residents of the tiny town of Coopville on Whidbey Island already felt oppressed by an increasingly obtrusive neighbor, the U.S. Navy, whose plans to increase about sixfold the noisy growler warplane landing practices that already shatter the peace of the village some 6,000 times annually are under an environmental review, the conclusion of which appears foregone in the Navy's favor, when more bad news came a few weeks ago from the same bad neighbor. The town's water supply had been contaminated by a suspected carcinogen originating at the Navy's outlying landing field, where those landing practices take place. KPTZ learned of the problem by means of a press release put out by Citizens of the Eby's Reserve, a group that has been active in fighting the Navy's landing practice expansion plans. In response to an email request to speak with the spokesman, I found myself sitting opposite Rick Abraham, who identified himself like this.
Do you have a title at the Citizens of the Eby's Reserve?
I'm their environmental consultant.
I see. And what's your background that qualifies you to be their environmental consultant?
About 30 years of experience working for, I do work for law firms that do toxic tort cases, the international unions, who have workers in a lot of the industries where toxic chemicals are used. They hire me to research problems and, concerned about exposure of workers and people in the community. So working for polluted communities, trying to advocate, get the government agencies to do their job and protect people. So,
I see. So are you a toxicologist, or is your background in public health?
I don't have any of the letters behind my name, but the people who do have those letters hire me to do the investigations and prepare the reports. And it really comes from years of experience working in the public interest side of the fence, where I just learned to dig up the dirt on polluters. If you've ever seen the movie Aaron Brockovich, that's what I do and done for many years.
So I just got this press release from Citizens of the Eby Reserve about, perhaps you can remind me, that's perfluoro, what's the name of the chemical?
Perfluorooctanoic acid, PFOA.
PFOA.
We're not going to pronounce it.
What is that?
It's a man-made chemical also known as the Teflon chemical. It was developed first by 3M, I believe. They got out of the business because their internal studies showed that it was causing cancer to laboratory animals. They suspected a lot of serious health effects. They got out of the business, and DuPont picked it up and for a while was the only manufacturer. And when I was hired back in the 1990s, I traveled the country, mostly on the eastern seaboard, taking water samples out of rivers, streams, private water wells, public drinking water supplies, documenting the presence of this chemical. So it's man-made, does not occur naturally in nature. It's almost indestructible. You probably have some in your blood, as do I.
It's in Teflon? Is it in like every Teflon pan that
it's used in? It's used in the manufacture of Teflon, and I think if you get it hot enough, supposedly it is released. DuPont's always denied that, but they've been sued in many places and have paid in many places, and I've been involved in those lawsuits. They've been fined by the EPA for major amounts of money for not disclosing their internal studies that documented, health harms to workers, laboratory animals. In fact,
so those are documented harms.
It's an unregulated chemical by EPA. There's no drinking water standard.
Was that right? Because I thought the press release said that there had been something like 5 or 6 times the acceptable levels found right. in the water under Coopville.
What EPA did is they established health advisory levels. They're not enforceable.
I see.
And EPA's, and you know, they've done some studies and said that at these levels, this chemical, they're not of major concern. But above these levels, people shouldn't be exposed. So EPA has been criticized because those levels are too high. And EPA has for a long time known of the danger of this chemical. Some states have set their own standards. As an example, EPA says anything more than 70 parts per trillion, you shouldn't drink it. The state of Vermont has that at 20 parts per trillion. Another state at 14. And a lot of scientists says that EPA has been behind the curve and has not passed standards. It should be a drinking water standard, and the levels that are acceptable should not be so high because they put the public at risk.
You know, with a lot of these chemicals, it's a real unknown how tiny an amount can actually have.
Well, like, we're all guinea pigs here. Yeah. You know, there are thousands of man-made chemicals that are out there that have not been adequately tested. This was one of them.
So tell me what is going on in Coopville. I mean, you know, like what was discovered and when and how and, you right. know, and what the Navy's doing about it.
Well, you know, there are major concerns about this chemical. There have been since, you know, the early 2000s. Those concerns came to light when a farmer who had hundreds of cows dying near a plant that used this chemical, he got a lawyer. Lawyer sued, and the lawyer uncovered all these internal documents showing that companies had done this testing and knew it was dangerous. He turned those documents over to EPA. He gave the information to EPA, and EPA began set up a science advisory panel, started looking into this this chemical, and then started setting what it called health advisory levels. And those have changed. In 2009, you know, that level was, I think, 400 parts per trillion. And now, you know, years later, after more science has come in and more information has come in, they dropped it down to 70. And it will probably be dropped again. So EPA, they started to require municipalities, public water treatment systems, to report the presence of these chemicals. Large systems, big cities, had to test for it in their water. Now, if they were over the limit, nothing happened. All EPA was doing was tracking the presence of this chemical.
Was it because of such routine testing that Coopville discovered it? I mean, how did it get discovered?
What the Department of Defense did in response to EPA's requirement that it be monitored for is they ordered their installations to test for the presence of this chemical in their drinking water supplies, and they found it. And they found it first at Altfield, the main base there on Whidbey Island, and then they found it out at the outlying field, which is where the jets practice. It's the one that you hear about in the news, fly low over people's homes, causing all kinds of problems. They found it in the drinking water there at the OLF. And so
And why would it be present at Navy facilities? I mean, what's that have to do with Teflon?
Well, it doesn't have to do with Teflon. It has to do with the chemical. And it turns out this chemical was used in firefighting foam way back when. It's not used anymore. In fact, you know, let's say they quit putting it in firefighting foam. In fact, in the European Union, it's and some other countries, they're not even allowed to. They got rid of their stockpiles. It's recognized that this chemical, you know, it gets.
But did your press release not say that the Navy still has some stockpiles?
They do. The Navy has a lot of its stockpile, and the Navy is still using it. They say they're not going to use it in training, but they will use it if there's a fire and a crash and till another substitute comes along that they're satisfied with. Crash sites are where this chemical, where they use the foam, that's how it gets in the groundwater. But OLF, the Navy wants to increase those flights, those training operations, from about 6,000 now to 35,000 a year. You can imagine the impact that's going to have, and also the increased risk of accidents. Now, how that chemical got at the outlying field outside of Coopville the Navy is not saying. They say we have no record of it being used there. In fact, there was a crash there in 1982, which the Navy has not talked about, has not asked people about. It's the last thing they want to draw attention to is accidents and the potential for accidents and the potential for more contamination from 35,000 flights they want to do.
But that crash was witnessed by neighbors.
It was witnessed by neighbors. I found eyewitnesses to it. And not only, but neighbors saw the foam being spread up and down the runway. Now, the Navy's had a series of public meetings, open house public meetings that I attended, residents attended. The Navy never asked anyone what they had seen or what they knew about the use of the foam at that site. The Navy doesn't want to know. And if you ask the Navy, and I brought, you know, about this accident, they'll say, well, we haven't, you know, had the time to look into it. So making the...
Doesn't the Navy have to record accident incidents?
Of course they do. Every aircraft accident, you know, is just... it's recorded. It's studied in detail. And, I mean, we've got the newspaper articles where this... Right. It was a jet in training, went upside down, killed three pilots, and crashed right next to the outlying field and not far from the town of Coopville's water supply. And here's the concern. The contamination at OLF has spread off-site. It's turned up in a one resident's well about three-quarters of a mile south at 442 or 440-plus parts per trillion, which is about six times higher than EPA's health advisory level. It's turned up in the town of Coopville's water supply because they have a draw well, a supply well sitting right next to the outlying field.
So it's contaminated the whole aquifer.
If you go to Coopville and you drink a glass of water, you're drinking water contaminated with PFOA. And what the city's trying to do to lower those levels is dilute it, mixing with wells that aren't contaminated with the well that is. And so, you know, dilution. Now, the levels found in the town's water slide were like 65 parts per trillion, and the EPA advisory level is 70. So it's close.
But elsewhere, it's 20. So you were saying in Vermont?
Yeah, well, that's if that water supply in Coopville, if that was in Vermont, they would be drinking water.
That Vermont considers poison.
That's right, considers not safe to drink. The Navy has offered to test people's wells within a mile radius of the site. And there are, I forget, you know, probably close to 100 private wells and public water wells, which supply water to more than one home, for instance. And the Navy is telling people what the results are. And they're not giving people the complete copy of the analysis that their laboratory does. You know, we've asked for that. People have asked for that. We get summary information right now. But as those reports are coming in, we're finding like 200 plus, 400 plus. And you can look at where these wells are located and you can see that it, you know, this contamination has spread off site. And the Navy is delivering bottled water to those homes and telling people, don't drink your water and don't cook with your water.
But they have not made that offer for the entire town of Coopville.
No, because
the water there is slightly below the threshold level.
But below what the EPA says is the
Are they doing continuous testing? I mean, are they doing repeated testing to see if that level rises?
Well, that's a good point. That's absolutely what they should do. Now, the town of Coopville did their own independent testing, and that's how that they got their own.
Oh, really? So that was not the Navy testing.
Not sure what the Navy's results of the town's water supply, what those results are, or even if they're in yet. But the town immediately jumped on it. You know, the mayor was proactive and found it. You know, had it tested, and there are actually two well fields that supply the town and a number of wells, but the one closest to OLF was contaminated. So. But surely it needs to be monitored on a regular basis. You know, so a one-time so-called safe reading doesn't mean it's going to be safe in the future. And it's a real problem. For instance, all the homeowners located between the contaminated spot on the Navy's outlying field and that well that's three-quarters of a mile away, there are a lot of wells in between. What are those property owners to do and to think?
They're not automatically being tested by the Navy.
They have to ask to be tested, and the Navy will test it. And
only if they request it.
That's right. And we're encouraging people, you know, get your well independently tested. Don't rely just on the Navy's.
What does such a test cost?
About $300-$400, and we're in the process. We had a big public meeting near Coopville, and you know, we had people standing against the walls, packed room. People were concerned about their water, wanting to know what they can do, not trusting the Navy, not trusting the polluter to investigate the pollution.
Now, you say you've been an expert witness in trials about this very chemical in the past. Is that right?
Not an expert witness. Oh, okay. I've been an expert witness, but not on this chemical. But I hate the term expert, but because in this battle, we all have to be experts, right. And we all have to. None of us can rely on either the EPA or any agency of the federal government to protect us. We got to do our homework. We got to find out. We got to take action, as those folks in Flint, Michigan, had to do. Yeah. EPA. That's an example of how the regulatory agencies can't always be counted on to protect us. We got to be informed. We got to protect ourselves. So.
In other cases with this chemical, have you seen damage awards? I mean, you know, what sort of results have come from some of those trials?
Oh, yes. DuPont has paid. They've been fined by EPA. They've paid. The Navy is right now, it's being sued in several places and is providing bottled water and trying to figure out alternative water supplies in different places around the country. So this is a problem that is really just coming to light because the EPA did require that municipalities and water treatment systems monitor for it. This problem is widespread. Municipalities are trying to figure out, well, what do we do about it now? You know, we're having to tell people that they're drinking contaminated water and in some cases find alternative water supplies. It's a real problem.
Is there any hope of being able to clean the problem up? You said that the chemical is very long-lived.
It's long-lived. It accumulates in the body. But that's what makes this chemical so dangerous. Once you get it in you, it stays there. Yeah. And I forget what the half-life is. Like, it takes a long time to get out of your system. It accumulates in the body. In fact—
And I gather that it's water-soluble. So
absolutely.
It's just in solution in the water. It's not like it's going to precipitate out
It's in earthworms. It's affected earthworms' DNA. It gets into the fish. It gets into the birds. It gets in us, and it stays there. And you can have more in your blood than in the water you drink. And so when EPA talks about, 70 parts per trillion is, 69 is okay to drink, basically what they're saying. 70 is not, but 69 is.
69.99.
That's right. But it doesn't account for what you already have in your system. You see, it's like because what you're drinking adds to what you have in your system. Those folks around that family that's been found 400 plus parts in their water system, they've been there for years. They've had grandkids come over. They've been eating vegetables out of their garden. So how much do they have in them? This is a retired doctor who we did a little news conference in front of the Navy's property, and he said when he got the news, it was like being hit in the stomach. You know, you can just imagine you've got this, you've moved to this beautiful island, you're retired, this is the place of your dreams, and suddenly you're being told that you can't drink your water. There are filtration systems, some that work, they're very expensive. It's hard stuff to get out of the water. You can't, you know, and some municipalities have had to install some very expensive treatment systems, and in the 90s, I was getting internal documents from companies where they were having, they knew back in the 80s that this chemical was dangerous. Companies, including DuPont, and were moving their workers, women workers of childbearing age, were being moved out of areas of the manufacturing plants where they might be exposed. This was long before anything was reported to EPA. They've known this was dangerous. It finally got into EPA's hands, and they've been slow to act. The Justice Department was going to prosecute DuPont, In fact, I turned over boxes of documents to the Justice Department, internal documents that I got from companies through my research. The EPA did not prosecute. I mean, the Justice Department didn't, because EPA worked out a deal with DuPont where they would voluntarily agree to quit making the chemical, phase it out. They're not producing it now, producing it in China, but not in the U.S.
Oh, so it is still being manufactured.
Yeah, it is being made and probably coming in products that we're, I mean, that's the circle of poison, like pesticides.
So,
no,
I mean, has the Navy agreed at this point to eliminate their stockpiles with the knowledge that they now have?
No,
about
they're going to eliminate them by using them. That's the problem. And that's why, you know, our position is that this chemical shouldn't be used. They're safe alternatives. If they have a crash at OLF, the outlying field right now, that chemical is sitting in the fire trucks waiting to be sprayed. Now, about a week ago, they had what the Navy is calling an incident at the base there, where they won't tell us the details. They're saying it's being investigated. But evidently, there was a fire. The two pilots in the plane were life-flighted out to a trauma center, and the Navy's not saying whether, you know, they used the chemical or not. But it's on the trucks. It was ready to be used, and that's the Department of Defense's position. We're going to use it. If we won't use it in training, but if there's a fire or crash, we're going to use it.
With Citizens for the EB's Reserve environmental consultant Rick Abraham, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Compass.
More information comes from the ears to the brain than comes from the eyes to the brain. And more information goes from the brain to the ear.
Gordon Hempton, who at 63 has spent more than half of his life recording, studying, and analyzing natural sound, has moved to Port Townsend for the winter. He plans to use our town as a base for the promotion and distribution of The Earth is a Solar-Powered Jukebox, a discussion of sound's environmental importance supplemented by a multimedia component. Hempton is taking advantage of his time in Port Townsend to register his opposition to the increased growler activities, saying that it threatens a valuable natural resource.
Those of you that think the Navy is looking out after our health and welfare, and that the Navy, in taking these actions to become better trained and fight for American freedom, that we have to be very careful, because at least in this case it's quite clear that we're sacrificing the freedom, the very freedom that we're fighting for. My opinion is that the only safe alternative is to move the entire operation, that the Navy has outgrown its facilities.
The book discusses specific locations. This includes the Ho Rainforest, where people can still enjoy what Hempton characterizes as one square inch of silence. This patch of forest, which Hempton uses to demonstrate the power of quiet, is endangered by civilization in general, and the growlers in particular.
In the exercises that I do when I bring people on the hikes to a one square inch of silence in the Ho Valley, and we are quiet, and it's often their first opportunity to experience nature, not only quiet, but socially quiet. Because we're quiet does not mean that we aren't communicating. You feel something, not only in the presence of the valley all around you, but in the presence of people also like-minded and in that same state of refreshment that you are receiving. The reason for writing Earth is a Solar-Powered Jukebox was not only to train those that are going to use my work and apply them to the modern products that are increasingly forming the nature experience for audiences today, but to apply them correctly and deliver what I consider to be messages that are coming from Earth.
Hempton said that the trained ear can listen to a natural environment and know several things.
we can tell whether or not the natural environment where the recording was made was recently impacted by some sort of devastating force, whether that be logging, whether that be a storm, whether it be a wildfire. There are a number of things that happen because all those different bandwidths are not being occupied. In other words, there's empty seats in the orchestra. For instance, if I handed you a box of chocolate and there all the spaces in that chocolate box were filled, and then I hand you another box of chocolates and you see that there are only 5 or 6 pieces but 24 slots, you would know, hey, somebody, this is, something's happened to this box of chocolates. What happens is that the modern person today, the average person, has been handed an empty box of chocolates, and they really don't know how the real deal comes down. After you listen to the recordings that come from a truly pristine place, such as the heart of biodiversity, the Ecuadorian Amazon rainforest, that it's a tune that doesn't leave you, that somehow stirs you in a deeper way that we cannot stir each other with our own instruments. If you're thinking about what you're listening to, that is not listening at all. That's controlled impairment. When the indigenous person listens, they simply open themselves to the environment. Not only do they know already that faint sounds are the most important sounds because it's the arrival of the first information. If they're only paying attention to the loud sounds like we generally do, then not only are they getting the information that everybody else knows, but perhaps, you know, that jaguar now is way too close. They should have been hearing its paws crinkle the surface of the very firm tropical leaves on the forest floor, not when they hear a growl, you know, before the lunch. By the time you see something in a place like the Amazon rainforest, it's way too close. The visual horizon is often only 100 feet at best, often 3 feet, and sometimes practically nothing, especially at night, where the auditory horizon in the Amazon rainforest is easily a quarter mile, often 3 to 4 miles, and I've recorded as far as 10 miles away.
Natural sound, he says, has musical qualities.
Even an untrained scientist can listen to a nature sound that's recorded, let's say, in a forested situation, be entertained here in the Northwest, a coniferous forest, and we can listen to the pleasant sound of the wind through the coniferous trees. If there are a variety of trees, there's going to be complex tones that register the advance of the wind. The whole thing paints itself into a picture that sounds like music. That's healthy to our ears. Let's say we then listen to a tree farm with a particular tone, not complex tones, only one tone. And because they're planted so dense with a very little light reaching the forest floor and very little opportunity for wildlife to get whatever they need. And the outcome is that this is pleasant still in nature. But it's not music. I prefer this other place.
When placed in a natural sound environment, many people just don't know how to react.
If you were to take your 10 average tourists today and plunk them in a quiet place, that would be tough. That would be like a sound bomb going off. They'd be hollering to each other. They'd be like talking about what happened 2 weeks ago, not talking about the place. But I find that people that go to quiet to gain quiet themselves hardly say anything at all after the first hour.
Hempton said that pure natural sound has spiritual qualities.
It lets us know what is truly important. It's basic not only to American freedom, but to human nature. And our most silent places today in the built environment are our churches. This is the Church Olympic National Park that needs no leader. It's complete. All we have to do is show up.
The Earth is a solar-powered jukebox, can be downloaded from soundtracker.com. This is Charlie Burmant for KPTZ Compass.
This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans and Charlie Burmant. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.